Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and today we welcome Jessica Walliser to the microphone. She has a degree in horticulture, frequent contributor to national and regional gardening magazines, and her latest work is called Good Bug, Bad Bug: Who's Who, What They Do, and How to Manage Them Organically. Really looking forward to talking with her, but also looking forward to talking with you about our fall membership drive, and also with Jim Packard, who's joining us for a few minutes. It's our fall membership drive. We're here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, listener donations are the foundation of our budget, and that's why we have to ask for your gift right now. Make your pledge of support at WPR.org or call us toll-free at 888-202-2552. And Jim, we have a goal.
We do indeed, Larry. We've got a goal of $11,000, just as we did yesterday. And we thank everybody who helped us make a goal yesterday. Now we're looking forward to meeting that challenge today. And to help us out, the Wisconsin Master Gardeners Association has provided a challenge grant of $2,000. So we need $2,000 in order to meet that. And we have a goal of $11,000. It'll help make the program possible in the months to come. Won't you be the first to get us started this morning? Make your pledge right now online at WPR.org or toll-free at 888-202-2552.
And Jim, we have a special incentive for our listeners. You know, when you donate $120 or more, we'll send you a copy of Jessica Walliser's book, Good Bug, Bad Bug. It's a wonderful book. We'll be talking about it as the show goes along. But I look through it, and virtually every bad bug that is in there, colorfully illustrated, I've almost had all of them in my yard at one time or another. So it's a wonderful book. It tells you how to control those bugs organically. And we'll send that out with every $100, $120 contribution or more. You know, you can listen to WPR every day for years. You'll never get a bill. Unlike with your phone or utilities, you won't receive monthly bills from us. Based on how you use it, we use the honor system. We count on you to voluntarily make a pledge to pay for the listening you do. And you can do it at WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552.
It'll just take a couple of minutes of your time. In the time it takes to get a cup of coffee, you can complete a pledge to WPR. Whether you pledge online at WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552. You'll be done in a flash. That pledge will take about 3 minutes to complete. Your impact on WPR lasts all year long. And at $120, we'll not only send you Good Bug, Bad Bug by Jessica Walliser, we'll send you the Wisconsin Member Benefit Card, entitling you to two-for-one entrees at many Wisconsin restaurants, two-for-one deals at bed and breakfasts in the state, as well as major cultural attractions as well.
You know, our guests really enjoy coming on the program, and Garden Talk in particular. I think our guests, we have some wonderful guests every week. And the guests know they're going to get 90 minutes of pretty intelligent questions from people. And they'll get questions from you, our listeners, and not interrupted by commercials. So many very good guests come back again and again. And your financial support, frankly, makes that possible. Listener support's the most reliable portion of our funding. Thanks in advance for making your pledge. Remember that for $120 or more, we'll send you a copy of Good Bug, Bad Bug. Call us at 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552, or go online to WPR.org. And don't forget, we need to make that $11,000 goal in order to receive our $2,000 challenge grant from the Wisconsin Master Gardeners Association. It's a wonderful bunch of wonderful people, and we don't want to let that $2,000 go. So call in with your contribution. You're supporting Garden Talk, and you're supporting Wisconsin Public Radio in general. I want to turn to Jessica Walliser, who's... Hi, Jessica.
Good morning.
Good morning. Great to have you with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me back. I'm looking forward to the program.
Oh, I tell you what, I'm looking forward to having you on. I want to give our listeners your number, or our number here, to call in with questions for you. The call-in number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. I love your new book.
Thank you.
One of the things I like about it, but the fact that we have color photography, wonderful colorful pictures of the not only the insects, but often of the damage they do to leaves and so forth. It really helps to have something like this for identifying what's going on out there.
It does. And one of the most positive remarks that I've had about the book is the illustrations and the fact that it really is so easy to use. You know, there's 24 pest insects and 14 beneficial insects. They each have their own two-page layout with photographs. And the photographs of that damage is so important because in so many cases, you know, in your garden, you see the damage, but you don't see the pest. Either they're really good at hiding, or they come out at night, or they're just not there when you happen to go out to the garden to look. So learning to recognize the damage is almost just as valuable as learning to recognize the pest itself.
Absolutely, because if we don't recognize the pest, we're not going to know how to really treat the problem.
Exactly. And so many of their damages, you know, the damage that they cause is so distinctive that you can't confuse it for anything else. Slug damage is one in particular that if you know what plants are susceptible to slug damage and you know the kind of raggedy holes that the slugs produce when they chew on the leaves, you can recognize that without having to go out at night with a flashlight to hunt for them. You know what it looks like. You know you can target right away without having to go through that step. And so it's important to have a book like this so that you can recognize both the pest and the damage itself.
And what I like is that as you open the book, I just turn to aphids here. We've got a description, we've got a good picture, how to spot the damage, the plants they attack, and then you talk about controls, like live biological controls and preventive actions.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole reason the book is called Good Bug, Bad Bug is because we really wanted to highlight to the average Joe home gardener, and that's who this book is set up for. It's not set up for entomologists or professionals. It's set up for the home gardener. You know, we knew we couldn't just include the bad pests because so many times there are insects that we find in the garden that are either benign, they don't have any effect on the garden whatsoever, or they're actually beneficial in that they prey upon the pest insects. So we wanted to create a book that really had a balance between the pests and the beneficials. So when we talk about the pests and controlling them, when we talk about the biological controls or the beneficial insects that consume them, we thought, well, we can't just mention that hoverflies eat aphids. We also have to show you a picture of a hoverfly and tell you how you can get them to come to your garden so that they'll be there to consume the aphids when you have the problem. So the front of the book and the back of the book, the pests and the beneficials, really go hand in hand, and you find yourself flipping back and forth often in the book to cross-reference them.
Well, we have Barb in Amberg, Wisconsin, who has a question for you. So let's go to Barb. Hi, Barb.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I was wondering how to get rid of fruit flies in your house. You get tomatoes and apples and all that type of things that you bring in for canning, and there might be a trapper or some sort of thing we can put down to track them.
There is, as a matter of fact, and fruit flies are not an insect that's included in Good Bug, Bad Bug because they're not officially a pest of the garden, but they certainly are a nuisance pest in the house. There's a great company called Gardens Alive, and Gardens Alive actually has a fruit fly trap that you put on your counter in the kitchen, and it's baited, I believe, with a pheromone. And they fly into this little plastic trap, and then, of course, they get stuck on a sticky surface and meet their demise, so to speak, inside of that trap. So it's a really easy thing to use. They're fairly inexpensive. The trick also with fruit flies is to obviously make sure that your screens are in good repair, so that they can't come in, and also to kind of keep any of that rotting fruit, rotting vegetables off the kitchen counter, because once you get them, you're going to have them sticking around the entire summer. So preventing them is another big key. And what I usually do when I bring my tomatoes in is, yeah, they look lovely in a beautiful bowl on the counter, but oftentimes I'll put them in a Tupperware with a sealed plastic lid so that I know I'm not going to get the fruit flies develop on them.
Thanks, Barb, for calling. Therese in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Therese.
Good morning.
Morning.
This is a perfect show for me.
Good.
I have something eating, it's not in my garden per se, but it's a little ornamental tree, a pagoda dogwood. And I thought it was bunnies, just like the bark. 6 inches off the ground, and so I fenced in the tree, and it's still being eaten, and I have no idea what it could be. So do you have any ideas?
It's stripping the bark off of the tree?
In just one little section, yes.
Okay.
And I thought, well, maybe it's an insect.
Usually not.
Okay.
Usually we see that kind of damage more with rodents than we do with insects.
Well, then my next guess would be a vole.
Yeah, I that's my original instinct is to think it's a vole, and a fence is not going to do anything for a vole because they can fit right through the openings or kind of nestle themselves right down underneath the fence. So if it is a vole, you're going to have to put up a better barrier than that.
And there are different ways, and this is probably, voles are not really what we're going to be talking about here today. But there are ways to control them, and you'll need to put a barrier up. Jessica's exactly right on that.
Yeah, and you'll have to actually bury the barrier a couple of inches under the ground. So maybe a little bit of plastic edging or metal edging and go a few inches out from the trunk of the plant and bury it a few inches down into the ground and make sure that obviously it sticks 5 or 6 inches above. There's castor oil-based repellents that you can buy or make that you spray on the area to help deter voles. It also works for moles as well. But I think just because they're actually affecting just that one specific tree, your fencing and protecting that one tree is going to be a better way to go.
And thanks a lot for calling. Therese, appreciate it. Rachel in Milwaukee, we're on to you now. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, my question is, it's not a garden plant, it's a house plant, but it's supposedly a ficus tree. And when I got it, it was really healthy, and it started growing new shoots, but now all of the leaves are falling off, and even the branches are starting to fall off. And I first noticed little white, sort of, they looked like little sticky sacs, and I thought they might be egg sacs. And one time, only once, I saw an insect that was a really weird-looking bug, and it was white, and it had little sort of, almost like hairs all the way around it.
Yep, like little tufts of cotton is how you would describe it.
Mm-hmm.
Like little tufts of cotton?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a mealybug. And mealybugs are very, very common on ficus plants. And, you know, once you get with any house plant like that a very severe infestation, which it sounds like you have, you're going to have to work really hard to control it. Because what happens is we apply like an insecticidal soap or horticultural oil, and it may not get all the eggs. And so then you have another hatch out. And so when you do treat a house plant, you have to be really religious about going back and examining it for pests on a regular basis, every week, every 10 days. After you make the application, go out, look, see if there's evidence of any more, and obviously you're going to want to follow the label instructions of any product that you use. You know, it's not like we can introduce a beneficial insect inside, but if you do have ladybugs coming in to overwinter in your house, sometimes we find them on the windowsills and things like that, putting them on your ficus is not a terribly, you know, it's not a bad idea because those ladybugs will prey upon and eat the mealybugs. They're not going to control it totally because it's such a contained environment, but it's certainly not a bad idea. You just obviously don't want to spray any, you know, insecticidal soap or horticultural oil when the, you know, ladybugs are on there because it will affect them as well.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Rachel, for calling. And as I look through your book, Good Bug, Bad Bug, I see on page, 27 and 28, the mealybug.
There's mealybug.
So it's a great, you know, as Rachel described it, I'm looking at it and, yeah, that's exactly the way it looks.
Yeah, it is. And they are very interesting looking creatures. And people often do, you know, describe them as little tufts of cotton in the leaf junctures and along the stems of the plants and kind of like a fuzzy white. And, you know, really, they are something that also can be removed just by hand. And that would involve just wiping the leaves, the stem surfaces with a cotton ball ball or a Q-tip that's been soaked in rubbing alcohol, and it allows you to actually physically remove the pests by wiping them off. Now, if it's a big ficus tree, you better have some time on your hands to be able to, you know, wipe the whole thing off with a cotton ball. But if it's a smaller plant, a lot of times we'll see them in the wintertime on people's amaryllis. They'll collect on the leaves, and those are big strapping leaves. So it's real easy to spot them. It's real easy to wipe them off on a plant like that.
Talking today with Jessica Wallace, her degree in horticulture, frequent contributor to national and regional gardening magazines. Her latest work is Good Bug, Bad Bug, Who's Who, What They Do, and How to Manage Them Organically. St. Lin's Press is the publisher. She also co-hosts a weekly radio show called The Organic Gardeners, and she also writes a regular garden column for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. She's the co-author of the books Grow Organic and also A Gardener's Journal. She's with us right till 12:30 today here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today with Jessica Walliser, and if you have a question for her as we talk with her, she's the author of Good Bug, Bad Bug, and she's the author of Grow Organic and A Gardener's Journal. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Give a call or send us an email, and let's go to Katie in Merrill next. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Larry. I have a question for your guest about flea beetles.
Okay.
I am brand new to gardening. I put in 3 raised beds this spring, and everything was going well until my nasturtiums started to be eaten up. And I identified them online as flea beetles, but I couldn't find a good cure for them.
Yeah, flea beetles are really nasty. They're the reason why I've pretty much stopped growing eggplant. I used to have an organic farm, 25-acre organic market farm, and we tried so hard to grow eggplants, and we did it successfully there because it was on a pretty large scale. But now that we've moved and I have a much smaller garden, I just think it's easier for me to buy them at the farmer's market because flea beetles are just, they're so terrible. So I feel for you on them. There are some things, however, that you can do that actually are very effective, and it's interesting because in researching for this book and talking to entomologists and scientists across the country at some major universities and finding out what they have worked for them in their research field and organic farmers and what they have found, I kind of wished I had had this book when we were farming, because it would have made my life a little bit easier, because now I really have all of the preventative actions and the product controls. I really know them by heart now because I'm doing all this research for it. So the first thing to know about flea beetles is the, adults overwinter in garden debris. So it's really important that you clean your garden of all debris at the end of every season so that you're eliminating a place for them to hide. Flea beetles actually lay their eggs in the top portion of the soil. And so when you cultivate around plants, frequently you're actually exposing those eggs, and then predator insects, they may desiccate. They're more exposed at that point, and so the eggs are actually usually eaten by spiders and damsel bugs and other beneficial insects. So that's another smart thing to do. Floating row covers also work in the vegetable garden, and this is one that's worked well for eggplants for a lot of farmers. They rotate their crops every year, and so when you plant your eggplant transplants, you cover them up with floating row cover, which is just a lightweight white fabric that lets light through, it lets water through, it lets air through. You cover the plants immediately as soon as they're planted, and you leave them covered until the plants come into flower. Obviously, you have to remove it so that the pollinators can get to it. But what it does is it keeps the flea beetles from getting on the leaves. Now, it's important that you use that in combination with crop rotation, because if you cover up a plant with a floating row cover and it was the same place that there already were flea beetles, they're going to hatch out, and actually you're going to keep them on the plant. They'll be underneath the row cover, so you have to watch about that. What I would recommend for you to do, actually, since you're talking about nasturtiums and not necessarily in your vegetable garden, is to turn to a beneficial nematode. And
They were actually, I had the nasturtiums interplanted with my tomatoes, so they were in the vegetable garden. They were on the nasturtiums and then on the Brussels sprouts.
Okay, on the Brussels sprouts, yeah. So what I would recommend that you turn to is a species of beneficial nematode. And there's one species in particular that I'm not going to tell you because you're going to ask me to write it down and all that. You do a little research or you get the book, and it'll be in there. And what these nematodes are is they're microscopic roundworms, and these are the beneficial species of nematodes because there's also pest species of them as well. And what you do is you mix it with water, and then you apply it to the garden soil before you put out the new transplants or before you sow your nasturtium seeds. And what these little microscopic critters do is they go down and they attack the flea beetles while their larvae, which are their larvae, live in the ground. Okay. And so what it really does is then you've got this established population of nematodes that are continually attacking the larvae of the flea beetles. And you have to do it every year. They don't survive through the winter, but it works really well. And we've had a lot of people that say this is a great management practice for them.
Okay. How far away, you said that they overwinter in vegetation. How far do they travel away from the garden?
Well, I mean, you see how far they can hop. That's why they call them flea beetles, because they can hop high and they can hop far. So, you know, you're talking about they can probably travel, gosh, maybe 30 feet, 40 feet, somewhere in there. So, you know, keeping things cleaned up in that area around the garden is going to really help.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Katie, for calling. Appreciate it. And Amy in Port Wing, your turn now. Hi, Amy.
Hello. I have an organic gardener, and it's I haven't had a pest problem, except now I have squash bugs. And they also, it seems like they do indeed give a virus to the plants. So what do I do?
Yeah, well, squash bug is, in my travels around the country talking about insects and beneficials and pest insects, this is the one that comes up most frequently, and I chuckled when you said it because I knew.
Sooner or later, the squash bug would rear its ugly head.
I knew that they were going to come up, and actually I was in Wisconsin in the wintertime at the Green Bay Botanic Garden and gave a lecture there, and I probably had 5 or 6 questions about squash bugs just from the maybe 40 people in the audience. So it was kind of funny that you brought it up again. I expected it. So squash bugs actually don't normally transmit a virus. Cucumber beetles do, which often feed on the same species of plants. Squash bugs and cucumber beetles look very, very different from each other. So describe the pest that you are seeing on your plants.
It is it's bright green and darker green, and I believe I can't remember if it's striped or if it's spotted.
Okay.
And
so
I killed a lot of them.
Sounds like Japanese beetles.
Yeah, maybe that's cucumber beetles. Yeah. It's cucumber beetle. That's
cucumber
not a
beetle.
Squash bug.
Okay, so is it striped or spotted?
Striped cucumber beetles come in both varieties. They come in striped and they come in spotted. Striped cucumber beetles are pretty much in the eastern United States, and then they're spotted. There are ones that live in the east and ones that live in the west. So they come in both striped and spotted. So you could have seen some of both, but that kind of iridescent-y green yellow is definitely a good indication that that's what you have. And they do indeed transmit bacterial wilt, which is a virus it's a bacteria that will completely wilt your cucumber plants overnight and your squash plants occasionally as well. The key for this is not necessarily controlling the beetle, but choosing the right varieties of cucumbers and squash. And so what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to specifically look for varieties that are resistant to bacterial wilt. When you buy your seeds, this is something you need to talk to the seed company about. When you go to your local nursery, if you buy transplants, you need to talk to the person, find out what variety it is, do your research, and find out if it's a variety that's resistant to bacterial wilt. Because, you know, the cucumber beetles, they can be controlled, but they're never going to fully be eliminated, and all it takes is one beetle that's infected for it to spread that bacterial wilt.
Okay.
So choosing resistant varieties are a big one. I'm also interplanting the crops with catnip, marigolds, other fragrant plants will help deter the adult beetles, although you can never 100% rely on companion planting to deter pests. But that is a situation where it often does help. It's not going to fully deter, but it will help them as well.
Okay, and so if it is in our area now, it hasn't been because we're way up north here, and my some of my friends grow commercially, not commercially, but they grow for
market
the area, and they have cucumbers. So do you think they're probably going to get it because they only live up, you know, maybe 6 miles away? It's probably just at some point.
You mean get the cucumber beetles?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm sure.
Oh, they'll be there. They're probably there now.
And what we're seeing is, you know, there's so much migration of pest insects taking place right now in North America and all over the world, really. And, you know, partially from the scientists that I've spoken to, it's due to climate change. As our areas warm, pests that were not welcome where we live before now can survive the winter. They're now migrating in earlier in the season, and we're having troubles with them, and we never have before. You think about the Japanese beetle and how they have migrated. They've now jumped over the Mississippi River, and they're finding them in Missouri and other western states. And, you know, it's scary, but we're all going to start to be exposed to pests in our garden that we have never, after a lifetime of gardening, we've never had to deal with before.
Yeah, unfortunately. Thanks, Amy, and good luck to you. Appreciate your call. Robert and Nina, it is your turn. Hi, Robert.
Hi, I'm hoping Jessica can give me an idea of a problem that I have. I have numerous varieties of trees in my yard, but my favorite one happens to be about a 15-foot tall scarlet oak, and it's about 10 feet across, and this summer, for the first time, I had a lot of defoliation of the upper, just the upper newer branches on the tree, the top growth, and never was able to identify any bug on it at all. Some of the lower leaves had a little damage, which was kind of like little holes in the shape of the little, which you'd see on a domino.
Yeah, little dots.
In perfect little rows, and I know from checking the tree, I've never seen any casings from gypsy moss or anything, so I don't think that's a problem. Any ideas?
I wonder, Jessica, I had a on my birch tree, the Japanese beetles attacked it in much the same way, starting from the top, and the holes are kind of similar, too, to what Robert's describing. Do you think it might be Japanese beetle?
Gosh, I would be surprised if it would be Japanese beetles. There's always a mite. You know, you said it might be Japanese beetles.
I know what a Japanese beetle looks like, and I've never seen one in my yard.
Okay.
Yeah, and you're saying when you say defoliation, are you actually seeing the leaves partially eaten up there, or are you saying that whole leaves are dropping off of the tree?
No, they aren't dropping off at all. No, they're just, a half to three-fourths of the leaves are eaten on top.
Okay. Could be Japanese beetles. It could be any number of species of caterpillars, any of the tussock moths. I mean, there are literally thousands of species of caterpillars that feed on deciduous trees. Usually with tree cases like this, what I recommend that you do, I'm not a certified arborist, and I don't have a whole lot of training in arboriculture, and so what I would suggest that you do is go to a really great website, and it's just www.treesaregood, really easy one to remember, treesaregood.com, and that's where you can find what they call an ISA certified arborist, and that stands for International Society of Arboriculture. And an ISA certified arborist will be able, they'll tell you on that website where you can find one where you live and contact them to come out and take a look at the tree. They're going to want to do it obviously when they can see the damage. And they can actually get up there in the canopy and look for a pest. They're going to be able to give you a much better idea of what it is. You know, if you would say to me, oh, I saw these, you know, white caterpillars that were real fuzzy, I could say, oh, it's a tussock moth, and, you know, here's what you need to do. But without actually having evidence of what a pest looks like, get somebody who can get up into the canopy of that tree and actually do a proper identification for you.
And good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call as well. Jim Packer joining me in the studio, and he's here to help me ask you for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Your contribution makes the work of Wisconsin Public Radio and shows like Garden Talk possible, and it's easy to make your donation. Just go online at wpr.org or call us toll-free at 888 202-2552. And Jim, we've made some progress.
We have indeed, Larry. We have that goal of $11,000 for the program, and we're more than halfway there. We appreciate the Wisconsin Master Gardeners Association, who issued a $2,000 challenge, and that was met, so that's been added. So right now, we're at just about $6,000 raised so far in the program, with about $5,410 to raise to make that goal. And we'll help you do that by sending you a copy of a book when you pledge at a certain level, Larry.
That's exactly right. If you pledge $120 or more, we'll send you a copy of Jessica Walliser's book, Good Bug, Bad Bug. And you know, it's interesting so far, Jim, virtually every bug that has come up specifically mentioned on the program, I've been able to page through Jessica's book, find a great picture of the bug, find the damage that it caused, a picture of the damage that it caused, and then I can look at the description, spotting the damage, the preventive actions, the biological controls, and the whole works, and it's all there in this book. And we're sending that along to everyone who contributes at least $120 to Garden Talk here during this program, only during this particular program. Every Friday, this program is devoted to one of my favorite pastimes of public radio listeners, gardening. And every week, we have a different guest expert with a gardening specialty to join us and answer your questions. Some are horticulturists today, like Jessica Walliser. Others work with lawns. Others work with trees. Others work with fruits and vegetables. All kinds of organic gardening and a whole lot more. So I hope you'll support this program where you get so much gardening information all year long. So pledge now. You can pledge securely at WPR.org or call us toll-free at 888-202-2552. We want to make that goal.
Indeed, and we want to thank Peter and Rachel and John, who are some of the people who've pledged in the last few minutes, all of them with laudatory remarks for Wisconsin Public Radio, and especially for Larry's show. And you can make your pledge any way that you choose. You can give on the web. It's especially efficient. You go to WPR.org. You can pledge whenever you want to. If you're online now, you barely have to stop what you're doing. You save us the cost of sending a reminder. You save yourself the cost of a stamp and the bother of writing a check. WPR.org. It's that simple.
It's that simple. And don't forget, we have a $2,000 challenge grant from the Wisconsin Gardeners Association, Master Gardeners Association, a wonderful group of people who listen regularly to Garden Talk on Fridays. And in fact, if my guest doesn't have an answer, and Jessica's had all the answers so far, but my guest doesn't have an answer, often a master gardener will join in with a question. That's one of the nice things about life here on Garden Talk. We've got a great group of people. Every dollar makes a difference to Wisconsin Public Radio, no matter what the amount. Every gift matters. $60 here, $120 there. And we've had some $1,000 contributions in the past, too, which would be always very helpful. That's how it works. Individual donations from thousands of listeners just like you make up the largest share of our budget. And there certainly is strength in numbers, because when more people give to Wisconsin Public Radio, the future of programming you love is more secure. And that's why your gift now, no matter what the amount, is so important. So make your contribution. You can make it securely online at WPR.org or toll-free at 888-202-2552. And thanks to everybody who's contributed so far. We're talking with Jessica Walliser today, author of Good Bug, Bad Bug. Pleased to have you join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And Jessica, we have a call from Anne in West Allis next. Anne, hello.
Hello, good morning.
Morning.
I would like to talk about the Japanese beetle.
Okay.
We've had them for about 3 or 4 years, and we put in 4 traps this year, and we must have thousands in the bag. We also hand pick off the roses and the beans. One afternoon, my husband picked 182 beetles off the beans.
Yeah. Wow.
what I want to know, and they especially like yellow roses, what can we do for next year? I think this year they're pretty well done.
Yeah, they're finished for the season this
They've already laid their eggs.
Yes, they have.
Yeah, lucky you, right? When you say you set up the traps, tell me about where you put those traps.
They're about, well, because our yard has roses in different places and the garden, we tried to keep it about 20 feet or so away from the plants that they seem to prefer.
Okay. Well, you're not going to like what I have to say.
Yeah. Okay.
But you made your bed, and now you have to lie in it.
Okay.
Those traps actually lure in more Japanese beetles to your garden than if you didn't have the traps there in the first place.
Well, I've heard that before.
Yeah. They are pheromone-based traps, and you may say, but look, they're catching and trapping thousands. Well, they're flying in from almost nearly a mile around where you live. They can really sense that pheromone and will come in and stop for lunch before they fly into the bag. So if you're going to use that bag, you need to set it up several hundred feet away from your ornamentals. Otherwise, you are luring in more Japanese beetles. And a lot of people will say, you know, they'll tell me all the time, but Jessica, there's so many in the bag. If I didn't have the trap up, that other thousand, you know, Japanese beetles would be eating my roses. But that other thousand Japanese beetles would be at the property four doors down eating their roses instead of being at your house. So stop using the traps.
Okay. Unless
you can put
them... What do we do with the four bags of beetles?
What's that?
What do we do? How did we get rid of the four bags of beetles? We just, they're dead, of course.
Right.
Do we just put them in the garbage or bury them or what?
Just throw them in the trash.
Throw
them in the trash. People put them in the compost pile, but I don't really like that idea. That's kind of gross to me. I put them, I'll just throw them out in the trash. That's fine. And you also have to think, you've got neighbors pretty close to you where you live?
No, these lots here are 200 feet wide, so we're not, you know, it's not real big. This is about almost an acre lot.
Okay, are you worried about the grub damage that you can potentially have in your turf?
No, I'm worried about the beetles that will be coming up and eating my roses again next year.
Okay, because, you know, oftentimes we'll tell people, you know, if you're concerned about the Japanese beetle grubs consuming your grass, then there's a way to control those grubs. There's a couple different organic ways to control those grubs. Now, obviously, that is only going to control the adults that will, you know, come out of your own lawn because your lawn is the only one that's been treated. It's not going to stop the ones that emerge from your neighbor's lawn from coming over to eat your roses. So for people who, you know, are concerned about grub damage to their grass or they have a fairly secluded property where they can make a dent in their adult population by controlling the grubs, then we would talk about different methods to control the grubs. But what you may consider doing is when you spot that very first beetle, and depending on what, well, you guys are up in Wisconsin, so you're probably talking about the end of June, early July when you start to see them in the garden. As soon as you see that first one actually covering your most precious roses and your most precious plants with that floating row cover that I talked about earlier for a collar, it's a white lightweight fabric, and actually putting that, draping it, and fastening it at the bottom over the top of your most precious plants, and actually leaving it on there for several weeks until the major feeding damage is done. Now, I know this is like, well, then you can't see any of the flowers, and you can't
right.
see the lovely plant. So I do it on my fruit trees. You're probably not going to want to do it on your roses, but I have young fruit trees that were very, very, they were just completely being defoliated by the beetles. So I covered for about 3.5 weeks. They were covered in floating row cover to keep the beetles off. And it obviously worked like a charm because the beetles couldn't get to it. But you're not probably going to want to do that for your roses.
Unfortunately.
Your husband's doing a great thing by knocking them into soapy water or collecting them, squishing them, whatever. Hand picking will go a long way towards controlling them, but early hand picking is of particular importance because the very first few beetles that emerge and start to feed actually release what they call a congregating pheromone. And this is, it's not a sex pheromone, it's a congregating pheromone. So what it does is they release that and it's a signal to the other emerging Japanese beetles that this is a good place to come feed, come over here, and this is a good plant.
So by controlling and handpicking very early in the season, you're preventing those big gobs of beetles from gathering on any particular plant.
Good luck. Jessica, I can tell you that your advice is identical to Phil Pelletieri, our UW entomologist, when he's been on the show. Those traps just bring in more Japanese beetles.
Yeah, and it's a shame because they're marketed so well.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, and if they were actually effective, you know, nobody would be calling us about Japanese beetles because the traps would take care of all of them, but clearly they don't.
Allison Durand, your turn. Hi, Alice.
Good morning. Thank you. I have three plants that I recently put in this summer. One is a Sutherland elderberry,
okay.
A limelight hydrangea, and also a climbing hydrangea. And all three of these were doing wonderful until about mid-July, and they started to show stress, and the leaves turned yellow and were chewed on. I can't figure out what it is. Also, at about the same time that they started to turn, I had put some bargain mulch around them.
Yeah.
And I wondered if something in that mulch impacted those plants, because now they're alive, but they're not flourishing.
Yeah. What do you think, Jessica?
Well, I think, first of all, that bargain mulch is never a bargain.
Right.
With bargain mulch, a lot of times what they're shredding up and chewing up is used building materials, or pallets, which can contain and hold some pretty rough stuff. In the case of pallets, it might have been all sorts of chemicals and things that were transported on those pallets and might have leached into them, and then they're ground up and made into mulch. So bargain mulch is never a bargain. Doing your research before you purchase any mulch, and I like just straight shredded hardwood mulch from a nursery. I don't like the bagged stuff at the, you know, that you can sometimes buy at the gas station even, and things like that. They're dyed with things that are unreliable, and that might have had something to do with it. Also, the way that you applied it may have something to do with it. Obviously, anytime you mulch a plant, you want to keep the mulch away from the plant's trunk or stem directly. You never want it to come into contact with that because it can actually girdle the plant. So that might have something to do with it. It also just might be plain old transplant stress. I mean, July is warm, it's a hot month, and it's a stressful time for plants. And unless you really baby them and you really, you know, make sure that you're watering them more than a little sprinkle every day, you want to get a good, thorough, deep, penetrating watering a couple of times a week, they're going to have transplant stress no matter how careful you were about planting them, no matter how healthy they were in the landscape, at the nursery, they're going to have that. So, I guess I'm just going to cross my fingers that hopefully next year, you know, if you keep them watered throughout the winter, if you don't get precipitation and you make sure they're watered this autumn and very early next spring, I'm hoping that they'll bounce back and they'll get over that transplant shock, and only time will tell.
And good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Our guest today is Jessica Walliser, author of several books, including kind of the book we're zeroing in on today. It's Good Bug, Bad Bug. Who's who, what's what? Oh, let's see. Who's who, what they do, and how to manage them organically. I finally got it right. Jim Packer joining me as well. And we're here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Your contribution makes the work of Wisconsin Public Radio possible. It's easy to make your donation. Go online at WPR.org or call us toll-free at 888-202-2552.
Larry, we began this program with a goal of $11,000 for the full program. So far, $6,670 is raised with $4,330 to go. By my reckoning, that should be about 36 calls at $120, and we would have that goal of $11,000 in hand, and then pick up $2,000 that we've received in a challenge grant from the Wisconsin Master Gardeners Association.
And as you mentioned, the $120 contribution. For a contribution of that size or larger, we'll send you a copy of Jessica's book, Good Bug, Bad Bug. It's a wonderful book. It's about, 90 pages or so. Full-color photos of the pests and some of our beneficial insects, As I mentioned before, every pest we've talked about so far is in her book, and it shows you the biological controls, the preventive actions, the organic product controls, and a whole lot more. And the book is a nice size. It's something you can take out in the garden with you. What is it about, Jim? About five inches by six inches?
About 5 inches by 6 inches. There are a couple of references on the back there, especially the director of research and training manager at the Rodale Institute says it's an entomological tour de force. Congratulations, Jessica Walliser, on your solid treatment of the insect denizens of the garden. So this is something that, that you can have next to you on your garden cart so you can identify the pests that you want to avoid and control, and also the beneficials that you'd like to bring in. I didn't realize that a minute pirate bug would be something beneficial, but I will find out more about in this copy of Good Bug, Bad Bug that we'd like to send to you when you pledge at $120 or more at 888-202-2552 or just go online at WPR.org.
Chances are the Ideas Network has covered an issue that's close to you or a topic that's close to you. Certainly on Garden Talk, we have wonderful programs that bring in guests from all over, and the topics cover the entire state. I mean, we've had calls from all over the state relating to bugs today. It isn't only Madison and Milwaukee. This is a unique service that allows anybody listening to call in, make a comment, or ask a question. Many listeners tell us they've received kind of an advanced education from Wisconsin Public Radio. And I know some of our extension horticulture agents with their master gardeners can actually get continuing education credits for listening to this show on Garden Talk on Fridays. So I know many gardeners have told me they've received kind of an advanced education because of this particular program. What have you learned from Wisconsin Public Radio? Is it worth a pledge? After you've decided how much this service is worth to you, make your pledge of support at WPR.org or call us toll-free at 888-202-2552. And, Jim, we still have $3,820 to go to reach our goal.
$3,820, and you can do that when you make your pledge payment using an EFT, which stands for Electronic Funds Transfer. You authorize us to withdraw your monthly pledge amount from your bank account. Your installments are deducted automatically. We'll help you get started when you make your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. When you pledge at the $120 or level or higher, we'll also send along that member benefit card from Wisconsin Public Radio, where you get 2-for-1 member opportunities for restaurants, for bed and breakfast that participate, for cultural attractions across Wisconsin and the surrounding states as well. That's available when you pledge at $120 or more at 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
New members are important to Wisconsin Public Radio, and tell you what, about half of our pledges or contributors so far during this program have been new members, and that's wonderful. The more people who support Wisconsin Public Radio, of course, the more stable our financial situation, and the better we are able to withstand these economic ups and downs. So if you've never contributed before, know that your new membership is going to help keep Wisconsin Public Radio the same strong, reliable source that you depend on. So become a Wisconsin Public Radio member with a pledge of any amount today. Of course, $120 or more, we'll send you a copy of Good Bug, Bad Bug. But whatever your amount, call us now at 888-202-2552 or go online to WPR.org and make your pledge.
I don't think we can say it often enough. Wisconsin Public Radio is listener-supported. We say it on the air many times each day. And what it means is that we rely on you for a significant part of our financial support. And during the drive, we're asking you to call 888-202-2552 and contribute what you can to help us pay for programming. When you choose to make a leadership contribution of $1,000 or more a year, you'll support WPR in a very significant way. You'll be providing resources for Wisconsin Public Radio to achieve our mission, so you can pledge online at WPR.org, and it's safe, or call 888-202-2552 with your pledge of any amount.
And a big shout-out to the Wisconsin Master Gardeners Association for the $2,000 challenge grant that they've provided today. So You know, if when we make that $11,000 goal, it's going to go shooting right up there to $13,000, Jim.
Larry, I made a mistake earlier. I assumed that when we got the first $2,000 in that they would match it. I didn't realize until you said it, that we have to get the full $11,000 before we get that $2,000. So we're looking right now at a goal of $3,700 in the next 33 minutes that we need to raise in order to tap the Wisconsin Master Gardeners Association for another $2,000. And you can help us right now with your pledge at 888-202-2552. Pick up your copy of Good Bug, Bad Bug, Who's Who, What They Do, How to Manage Them Organically, all you need to know about the insects in your garden. That comes with a $120 or greater pledge at WPR.org.
You know, think about how often you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. I know a lot of people who tune in religiously for Garden Talk at 11 o'clock on Fridays. But maybe you listen every day on your way to work, or maybe you listen on the weekends. Think about the amount of time you spend on Wisconsin Public Radio. And, man, I hope it's an important part of your life. Would your day be different if you couldn't catch this program, the Garden Talk Show, with guests like Jessica Walliser? Well, if it would make a difference, make a contribution to keep the quality of the service strong. We'll be talking with Jessica some more after a look at the news. But for now, go online to WPR.org to make your contribution, WPR.org. Or you can call us at 888-202-2552. And when you do that, you're going to feel good knowing that you've helped support Wisconsin Public Radio and Garden Talk in particular. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller with my guest Jessica Walliser, author of the book Good Bug, Bad Bug. Talking with her today and certainly inviting your questions about bugs at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison. Well, anywhere, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Talking bugs in the garden today with Jessica, and we have Joy online from West Bend. Joy, hello to you.
Thank you. I'll just add to your commercials here. I think this kind of program, giving out information about gardens, helps support our environment, our family finances, exercise for us, and our well-being.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's great to live in Wisconsin and have this kind of radio available. I want to ask about squash bugs and squash vine borer. We were hit by both of them this year. We've moved around our squashes and are running out of places to move them. So I'm wondering, what can I do in an organic garden?
Both of those are in that book, too, or in Jessica's book. Go ahead, Jessica.
Yeah, and squash bugs, as I mentioned earlier to a caller, this is the most popular question that I get is about squash bugs, although the earlier caller it turned out to be cucumber beetles and not squash bugs. But anyway, squash bugs, you know, if we're talking about ways to control them, and this can be true of every pest, but it's even more so with a pest like squash bugs, we talk about getting optimum control over these critters. We're talking about starting when they are very young and very vulnerable. And this starts in the case of the eggs, if that's at all possible. Squash bug eggs are almost always laid on the undersides of squash leaves. Occasionally they're on the top, but they're collections of little coppery-colored ovals that are in little groups together. And people try to crush them, but they're awfully hard to crush because they have a pretty thick shell. So what we usually tell people to do is actually just kind of break that section of leaf that they're attached to off of the leaf and throw them away and get rid of them. And search the undersides of your squash leaves, if you can, every day for those eggs. If you start to notice the squash bug nymphs, which look very different than the adults, they're actually kind of a gray color, a pear-shaped with black kind of spindly legs on them. When you see them, that's the time to start to take hardcore action against these critters, because once they're in that big brown adult stage, they're much tougher to control. They're very resistant to both organic and conventional pesticides. So target them in the egg stage and in the nymph stage.
And I would mention, that, by the way, that you have a great photo of the bug, the nymph, and the eggs on leaves in your book.
Mm-hmm. so that you can see all three stages where you need to really focus on them. You know, praying mantis feed on squash bugs, and so releasing or buying an egg case, a praying mantis egg case, and letting them come into your vegetable garden, that's going to, you know, make a partial dent into that population. So them, spiders, and then there's a species of tachinid flies, which looks very much like a bristly housefly, that will lay their eggs on the back of a squash bug and will consume them. Those are some live biological controls, and they'll help make a dent. But with something like a squash bug, you need sometimes to take a little bit of an extra measure against them. This is the same thing I said to an earlier caller as far as how they overwinter. They overwinter as adults. So keeping the garden clean and free of debris every autumn, pull out the old vines, pull out all your spent vegetable plants, get the leaves out of there, get straw and hay that you used as a mulch out of there, because you're eliminating overwintering sites for them. Another way you could do it is if you're a gardener who tills, actually till your garden in the fall instead of tilling it in the spring, and that will help get rid of some of that debris as well. Trellising plants to keep them off of the ground. If you're talking about winter squash varieties that are vining, grow them up a trellis instead of growing them on the ground, because the squash bugs like the shelter real close to the ground. So keeping those plants upright is going to help get rid of those pests as well. And also watch what you compost with, or watch what you mulch with. If you're mulching your zucchini and your squash plants with hay or straw or grass clippings, you're giving a lot of shelter to those squash bugs. So instead, you need to mulch with finished compost or newspaper or mushroom soil. There's going to be less places for these pests to hide. They like really nice loose mulch, so go with something a little bit heavier dutier. More heavy duty, I guess I should say. Though heavier dutier is kind of a fun word.
I like that.
You know, hand pick adults, hand pick those eggs. If you absolutely have to turn to an organic product control, there's a product called Neem, N-E-E-M, that's fairly effective, in particular against the young squash bugs, and then pyrethrins. But pyrethrins, you know, they are organic because they come from a species of chrysanthemum, but they're pretty hardcore nerve poison. So it's not something that I would ever recommend that you apply lightly. You really must protect yourself. You really should only use them in the case of you really think your plants are going to, you're going to lose your plants as a result. Pyrethrins are really a last resort for most organic gardeners.
Okay, and the
squash vine borer?
Vine borer, yes, thanks.
Yeah, this is really actually a fairly easy one to prevent, and it's done. Is it on your winter squash or zucchini, summer squash? Where are you finding them?
Zucchini.
Zucchini.
Okay. When you set out your zucchini transplants in the spring, or when your seedlings have emerged and they've grown, now they have three or four true leaves on them, which are the ones that actually look like the squash leaf. You're going to want to take a strip of aluminum foil, probably about 4 or 5 inches long and maybe an inch and a half high, and loosely wrap. It should be snug against the stem, but you don't want to squeeze it really tight. Loosely wrap it around the base of that stem so that it's a little bit underground, maybe a half an inch or so underground, a quarter of an inch underground, and then the rest around the base of the plant. And you overlap the ends so that as the quote-unquote trunk or the base of that zucchini plant grows, the foil can grow with it. And what this does is this protects the most vulnerable point of that plant from the mature or the adult squash vine borer laying her egg on the base. Any other point on the plant, if you get a squash vine borer further up on the plant is still going to survive. It's that very weak spot right at the base of the plant where the crown of the plant meets the root of the plant that you want to protect. And having that aluminum foil is just a barrier, a physical barrier, that she cannot gain access to the trunk of the plant to lay the egg, and it works wonderfully. And you have to just go out and check it every maybe week or so to make sure that it's still there and that it's still in place and not actually girdling the plant, but it works wonderfully.
Ah, great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joy. Thanks a lot for calling. And Paul in Grafton, we turn to you now. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I came home from a trip sometime earlier this summer to find that about 5 of the young aspen trees I planted a couple years ago had been totally defoliated. There wasn't a leaf on them anywhere. And then a couple nearby had been partially defoliated. On the ones that were partially defoliated, we found they were just covered with what I thought was a caterpillar. But I emailed pictures to Phil Pelletieri. He emailed back and said it was a sawfly, but he didn't know which one.
Mm-hmm.
But that I shouldn't worry, it wasn't a pest. The trees would be fine. But I'm just wondering, I know they can take probably 1 year of defoliation.
Mm-hmm.
I assume these larvae turned into flies. The flies are going to leave eggs behind. How do I keep this from happening next year?
Yeah. I'm glad you went through the proper channel to get a proper ID, because a lot of times, you know, people see a sawfly and the sawfly larva looks a lot like a caterpillar, and so I can see how you would make that mistake. And so they'll turn to a product control that's meant to control caterpillars, and like BT is one that's really a common organic control for caterpillars. BT will not do a darn thing for sawfly larva because this is actually the larva of a fly. It's not the larva of a moth or butterfly, so it's not going to do anything. So you're going through the proper channels to get the right identification was exactly the right thing to do. So how do we prevent it from here? Sawfly larvae, for the most part, usually feed in large groups, which is what happened to yours, obviously, and you had this whole skeletonization of the leaves, and the whole tree basically got defoliated. There are hundreds of different species of sawfly larvae, and they attack all kinds of different trees, from pine trees to ash and elm, and then also to a lot of ornamentals like hibiscus and roses and willows as well. So they're really broad-ranging, so getting that proper ID is so, so important. Yeah, there's not a whole lot you can do to control them, except that they're easy controlled by a couple of organic product controls to spray. Not a whole lot of prevention you can do as far as a large tree like that goes. We can prevent them maybe on roses or hibiscus, but on a big tree, you got much more of a canopy to protect. So that's when you would want to turn to product controls. And one that I recommend for sawfly larvae that has been hugely effective and is, you know, reasonably easy to apply to a tree canopy is a spinosad-based product, and it's S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D. And spinosad is a fermented bacterial product. It's a naturally occurring bacteria that they do this fermentation process with it. And what they've determined is that with munching insects that take bites out of leaves, like a lot of species of caterpillars and sawfly larvae and many beetles and things, they ingest this bacteria and it disrupts their gut and stops their feeding and they die. And it's a very reasonable, very safe for you to use. Certified organic gardeners and farmers can use spinosad-based products. Lots of different brand names of them out there. You might have a hard time finding it at a local nursery. I would check there first. If you can't get a spinosad-based product there, then I would check online. Lots of different websites carry spinosad-based products.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks, Paul, for calling. And Tom in Franklin, hello to you.
Hi, Larry. How are you doing?
Good.
I got a question. I've got a problem in my yard with Japanese beetles, and similar to the earlier caller, they defoliate. I have two large linden trees in my backyard, and they seem to prefer those trees, and I also have some shrubbery along the side of my house. They don't seem to bother my other plantings. My concern is they defoliate this past season. The trees came back, but this is the second time this has occurred. I have put bags in my yard that they bought at the hardware store to capture the bugs, but I'm wondering if there's anything I can apply to the soil or where they came from to prevent this as an ongoing problem. I notice my neighbors seem to have the bags out as well, so it could be a neighborhood problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and those bags, the traps, and we did talk about them with an earlier caller, they're actually not a good thing because they lure in more beetles than you would have were you not using them. Yeah, so most current research says unless you can place them several hundred feet away from your garden and your landscape, they're not something that you want to use.
Okay,
so get rid of those and tell your neighbors to get rid of them unless your neighbors are real far away.
Okay.
In which case you want them to use them. Yeah.
Where do they come from? I mean, do they come, you know, we do have mulching in our yard.
They come from the grass. The larvae, which are the white C-shaped grubs that you find feeding on the roots of your grass, your turf grass, your lawn.
Mm-hmm.
And so targeting them, as with most pests, and we talked about this with squash bugs, targeting them when they are in that larval stage as grubs is when they're most susceptible. When we talk about organic control for grubs in the lawn, we talk about using two different products in partnership with each other. And the first is called Milky Spore. And milky spore is another bacterial product that's applied in a granular form to the lawn, and the bacteria go down into the soil. And as the grubs are munching the plant roots, they also happen to munch some of this bacteria, and it kills them. It does not affect earthworms. It does not affect any of the beneficial microbes in the soil. It specifically targets Japanese beetle grubs. It takes 6 applications of milky spore for it to be the most effective. That's 3 times this year and 3 times the following year. And then it's effective for 10 to 15 years after that. So we're talking about very long effectiveness after that. However, it's going to take 2 years to really get going and revved up in your lawn. So in the meantime, you can partner that milky spore application with a different species of beneficial nematode. And these, again, are microscopic roundworms that you mix with water, and then they're sprayed onto your lawn. And again, they burrow down into the soil, and they affect your crops. You have to do it every year. So what I say is for 2 years, do the milky spore in combination with the nematodes. And then by that point, the milky spore's population should be high enough to control those grubs. They guarantee for 10 to 15 years after that, and then you don't have to do anything.
That's amazing. Thank you very much for calling, Tom. Appreciate your call very much. And we appreciate all of the callers who have called in with contributions. Boy, this is our pledge drive. We're in the second day of our pledge drive. Jim Packer joining me again. What a great guest Jessica Walliser has been here on the program. And, you know, she, along with Jim and I, are asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Your contribution makes the work of Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Easy to make your donation. Just go online at WPR.org or call us toll free at 888-202-2552.
And once again, all those gardeners have come into play because we had a goal of $11,000 when we began the program, and right now we're at $11,135, so that people have taken Jessica's book to heart, and they've called 888-202-2552, and they've asked for a copy when they made their $120 pledge, and we'll also send along to them the member benefit card, which will entitle them to 2-for-1 entrees at many restaurants around the state, 2-for-1 nights at participating bed and breakfast, and 2-for-1 entree at various cultural attractions across the state. I was just looking at the Good Bug, Bad Bug book, and in there is a garden glossary, especially for people who are interested in organics. There's an organic product information appendix. There's also a source directory. So you have everything that you need right in this reference book. It's about 5x6, and it'll go right next to your garden, your cart. It'll have all of the solutions that you'll need for getting rid of the pests that you don't want and attracting the good bugs that you do want. And it's yours for a $120 pledge at 888-202-2552 or at WPR.org.
And you know, the book itself is great because it's the cover and the pages are such that you can take this book outside.
It can take a lot of abuse.
It can take a lot of abuse with some beautiful color photography. And a lot of people have already called in with contributions of 120 or more. We've had some very large contributions, too, early on in the program, Jim, that really helped us out. The Ideas Network, I guess, and Garden Talk, I think it's important to a lot of people because we get great information and advice from people like Jessica Walliser. I think the network is unique in the country. I've heard from people all over the place, all over the country, as a matter of fact. We get calls from everywhere who say they've benefited from the advice they've heard. And you may be like me sometimes when you're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, you're near the radio, you get drawn into a discussion on the Ideas Network. Sometimes I don't want to get out of the car when I arrive at a place because I want to hear the end of the conversation that's going on. I know we heard earlier from Emily, or Angie, I should say, from Chicago, who listens online, and she loves the program. She listens online. You may listen online, too, or maybe just turn on the radio every day, but you're going to get a lot of great information. I think you're going to get discussion that's really interesting. Hopefully you've learned something or been influenced by what you've heard. So we want you to pledge your support in appreciation for Garden Talk and for the Ideas Network. You can do it easily. Go online to WPR.org or call us toll-free at 888-202-2552. 2552, 888-202-2552. Jim, I was looking down at my script and having trouble reading it, and then I looked up and realized that in about foot-high letters, I have that phone number.
I know it's easy to block it out sometimes. It's 888-202-2552. To provide great radio, we have to pay the bills. It's just that simple, and we count on listeners like you to help by making a contribution today. You can contribute online securely at WPR.org, or you can call 888-202-2552. It's so quick and easy, and whether you pledge online at WPR.org or you call us at 888-202-2552, you'll be done in no time at all. Your contribution in any amount provides essential support for WPR, keeping our mission strong and our programming on the air. And obviously, we want to thank the Wisconsin Master Gardeners Association.
Oh, man, they're great.
Every year, they come in with a challenge grant to help us out, and we appreciate the $2,000 that they will add to the program because we're exceeding our $11,000 goal.
It's really wonderful, and a big thanks to all the Master Gardeners who listen and to the association for that wonderful contribution because it really helps us out here at Wisconsin Public Radio. And we've had 21 new contributors, people who haven't contributed before. Almost half of the contributors have been new, and I'm glad to see that. And some of them probably contributed 120. I'm sure some of them contributed less than that, $50 or $60. And that's always an issue. How much should I give? Well, you get to decide. Your membership in any amount is going to be turned into great programming that's going to keep you informed and entertained throughout the next year. So I want you to log on at WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552 right now and make your pledge in any amount. Members of Wisconsin Public Radio help us to do the essential work, really, of bringing you the information that you need each and every day. And one of the things I'm really happy for today is the fact that we have Jessica Walliser's book that we can offer to you for a $120 contribution or more. It's a wonderful book. Jessica's done a wonderful job. You know she's a smart lady. You've heard her talking here on the show for the last 90 minutes or so. She's done a great job with this book. You're going to enjoy the book, and you're going to find it very, very useful in your garden to identify the insects. I said before, every insect mentioned today on the show, I think maybe but one has appeared or does appear in the book, the pest book here. It's good bugs, too, good bugs and bad bugs. So give us a call now at 1-800-888-202-2552 or go online to WPR.org.
And when you pledge the $120 to pick up a copy of Good Bug, Bad Bug, we'll also send along to you the member benefit card, which will give you an opportunity to recoup the amount of your investment. You go out to eat three or four times over the next year, and you're easily going to recoup the amount of your investment because two-for-one entrees at many, many restaurants around the state of Wisconsin and surrounding states. You could go for a night at a bed and breakfast, get an extra night. So many ways to use that card, but it starts with your call right now and your pledge of $120 or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And Larry,
we're doing really well.
We're raising hash on that goal.
And I tell you what, we have about a minute and a half to go in our drive here for this show, this Garden Talk program. There's still time for you to get in. You're going to enjoy this book a lot, Good Bug, Bad Bug. And I hope you call in now with your contribution. Call in right now. A great big thank you to Jessica Walliser for being our guest today. She did a wonderful job. We want to have her back. I hope she'll come back and be with us again, even sometime when we're not doing a fun drive, and we'll have the whole 90 minutes with her again. But for now, if you want a copy of that book and to support Wisconsin Public Radio, call now at 888-202-2552. Or go online to WPR.org. That's 888-202-2552. Thanks, everybody, for contributing, and thanks for listening to the Ideas Network.